Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to CPA Review and More. All right, I mumbled a little there, but that's okay. CPA Review and More, which is on my podcast, which is on every Tuesday. And we have it, you know, we scan the globe for the best talent to present as our guests. And all right. And by the way, while I was scanning, I met Kenneth. Now, I'm going to let you pronounce your last name, Kenneth.
Amore.
All right.
Yes.
In fact, probably if you know the song, That's Amore, right? That's named after him.
Okay.
Anyway, Kenneth, what was very interesting about it was that Kenneth actually had heard about me. And I said, How did you hear about me? And it's interesting when you're studying for the CPA exam, all right? He actually bought parts of our course. And, you know, he said, someday I want to meet that dynamic looking Brad Pitt lookalike type guy. All right. And no, he said very nice things. So actually he's a person that he thinks I'm a legend, and I'm still shocked over that. But anyway, Kenneth is going to be our guest today, and we're going to talk about various areas of what Kenneth does, all right, and why he's doing that type of work, and hopefully it'll help for those, because we have a lot of people who listen, watch, who are in the accounting profession, or they're graduating from school, and they want to know, what should I go into? And we have, you know, we've had different guests on, you know, Bitcoin, and we had someone this morning on data analytics. She's big on data. She loves data analytics, and there's not a lot of people. That's a fairly new area. In fact, they're going to start testing that July 1st of 2021 on the CPA exam, all right? They're going to a lot of technology areas like artificial intelligence. That's what's going to be tested. And the reason for that is, all right, it's all going over to the auditing part, because that's where you get a lot of data analytics and artificial intelligence. And it's also because the auditing is becoming so filled with, you know, a lot of computer data, that type of thing, because on audits, you use that stuff. And the guy that's now at the AICPA, who's in charge of the exam, all right, he's a retired partner from Ernst & Young in New York. And he thinks that being a CPA is doing public accounting only, which I totally disagree with him. All right. And he thinks it is a license to be a public accountant, because he thinks auditing is the most exciting profession. All right. Well, 4 years from now, we're going to have a CPA evolution where it's not going to be exactly like that. You'll have areas you can go into. The exam's going to change. All right. So I don't know where this guy's coming up with all of a sudden saying, hey, CPA only does auditing. Okay. All right. We know CPAs do other things other than auditing, but that's another subject that if I go on, all right, I will have a heart attack, because I'll be angry. So anyway, no, I won't do that. But, all right. So Kenneth.
Yes, sir.
Where do you live?
I am in Houston, Texas.
And are you a cowboy part-time?
I'm trying to be.
You have a cowboy hat you wear?
Not yet, but I'm actually probably thinking of getting one of such for myself.
And cowboy boots?
Well, let's start with the hat first.
Will you get spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle? you actually are originally from where?
I'm originally from Nigeria, which is a West African nation.
And you've been in the United States for how many years?
For about 11 years now. I came in 2010, so it's approximately 11 years.
And you went to college in the States?
Well, my first degree was in Nigeria. I did accounting. I studied accounting in Nigeria, a university called the University of Benin. It's like one of the Harvard in Nigeria. And then subsequently did my master's at University of Southern California, USA.
Why did you want to become an accountant? I mean, what was it about accounting that you decided, hey, I want to go into accounting and major in it?
So the interesting part of this is that I grew up in a home of a lot of kids. So I can already give myself away by my accent, knowing that I'm originally from outside the U.S., Nigeria. And my dad had more than one wife. So I grew up with a lot of kids around in the home. And my mom had a store she used to sell. She had a food truck. So, and at the end of the day, I'm the one that typically helps out with counting the sales for the day. And she thinks, you know, anytime I do the accounting at the end of the day, it's always accurate. And she was really, really excited about having me, you know, study accounting. So she started calling me accountant even at that very early age, less than 10 years old. So I think for some reasons that just sort of, you know, went into my head, and I started seeing myself as an accountant.
Is that what you wanted to do before you? What did you want to really do? Is that what you wanted to be, an accountant always?
Well, as a kid growing up, I really, you know, wanted to. There were a couple of professions, one of which was law. I really wanted to study law, and my mom told me no, she didn't want me to study law. And that, okay, so let me put a caveat. I'm going to put here.
You heard about lawyers in the United States? They're well loved and liked by most people, is that correct?
No, it's not like that in Nigeria where I came from. So, so generally, I think there are professions that we as kids, as kids growing up, you just want to be, you know, I want to study medicine, I want to be an engineer, I want to be a doctor. And you probably really didn't know how to or how much go into each of these professions. But overall, as I, you know, started going into, you know, talking to folks and learning about where I really wanted to end up, I mean, in my career. But I found out that accounting was something that I believe that came naturally because I love numbers.
It's interesting. You were saying your mom. Yes. Is Nigeria affiliated in any way with England that you say mom?
Oh, yes, you're right. So Nigeria was originally colonized by the British. So the influence is still there with the way we write and the way we speak. That's correct.
Your mother ran this, did you say a food truck? I'm sorry, is that what it was?
So yes. So think about it like a food truck without a truck. So it's like a store where we're selling to college kids, and she had a store inside of the, you know, the college where we sell.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. And successful, I guess she was.
Oh, yes. I mean, at that level, yes, she was. And I was helping her with the accounting. And so
do you feel you got your entrepreneur skills because of your mother?
Yeah, I would definitely attribute it to her because for one to think about himself starting a business, you have to have those, I would say, those basic skills, that's being able to communicate with people, being able to engage with people, being able to be tenacious and to, you know, remember all the time that it's not always going to be, you know, sunshine. There's going to be some time where, you know, sales might not go the way you anticipated it to go, and just the ups and downs of, you know, having your own business. So I would say some of those qualities that I learned from her.
And how does accounting differ in Nigeria versus the United States? You don't use in Nigeria generally accepted accounting principles, correct? You don't use it?
Yeah, we don't because, you know, Nigeria is still, there is IFAS, right? IFAS is most countries now use, you know, IFAS, and Nigeria is one of those countries. And so it's the largest nation in Africa, you know, they had to quickly get on board with IFAS. So they use IFAS.
Now, you know that IFAS was supposed to be, they were all hepped up here to, you know, they converged from GAAP to IFAS in the United States.
Yes.
But I believe the SEC did not approve it. Mm. And IFRS is not going into effect in the United States. Mm. In fact, they were going to keep, they had it on the CPA exam for a while. And then effective July 1st, they're not having IFRS on the CPA exam anymore.
Oh, wow. Wow.
You know, they made such a big thing about it, all right? And no one here really understood it. And then, all right, they were testing like crazy. Mm. And all of a sudden, they said, oh, well, the SEC hasn't approved it in the States, so it's not going to be on the CPA exam anymore.
Wow. Wow. Right?
What a waste of time that was for the poor
exactly.
people that are starting to learn it.
Mm-hmm. I actually thought that the convergence that they were always talking about and planning was, you know, something that was really imminent. But
and, crazy. You know, in many respects, IFRS makes more sense than generally accepted accounting principles.
I agree.
But anyway, the thing is, when you got into accounting and you came to the United States,
yes.
and who did you work for exactly? How'd you start off?
My career started in oil and gas. So there's this company called Wilbros, Wilbros. It's an American oil field service company, and they have operations in West Africa. So in Nigeria, when you graduate, you must do what they call a one-year service for the government, where they send you out of the state. You know, let's say you started in California, they can send you to Texas and you can work for any employer there. And you just, it's like an internship. Think about it like an internship, but it's a mandatory internship. So I was posted out of the state, I studied, and then I served with this company. After I completed my 1 year service with them, I was retained as an employee. And that was where I started my career. I started my career in Wilbros, West Africa.
So you learned oil and gas accounting then?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I remember, and I'm going to go back a few years here, probably in the, 1983, there was a big, you know, gasoline, everyone was drilling here in the States,
mm-hmm.
for oil. And then all of a sudden there was a bust, I think in 83, 84, and all these people, like, you just go into a bank and say, hey, I want $10,000 to buy a rig and start trading oil, and they would just lend it.
Right? Wow.
In fact, on the western slopes of Colorado, all right, ExxonMobil was building up an area there, Grand Junction, Colorado, and they put in all new homes, hotels, and then there was a bust. Right?
Wow.
But when I went to Colorado around that time, because I lived there 6 years, they were looking for people who knew oil and gas accounting, and I just didn't have that experience because I was not from that area.
Right.
But what's the demand now for oil and gas accounts? Is it still big?
Well, I think, because of the fact that the demand for oil and gas accountants will depend on if oil and gas is doing well. It's the oil and gas industry has been hit so hard recently. So there's been quite a lot of layoff. And I don't know if I would say it's the most exciting place to want to, go into right now because of the volatility in the market.
So you would say in so many words, don't start learning oil and gas accounting.
I'll be very careful with putting that out there.
Hey, don't worry. What can happen? ExxonMobil. They don't have that much money.
I think the oil and gas been really, really hit so hard because when I moved to the U.S., I also worked with the oil and gas here. I worked Schlumberger, which is the world's largest oil field service company. And it's amazing. It's amazing. Some of the most amazing people I've come across in my corporate career I met in Schlumberger, very intelligent set of people and very culturally diverse company too. I mean, I remember knowing that in Schlumberger they were over 100 countries represented in the company.
Wow.
Company. So it's just amazing to know that knowledge is not an exclusive of a particular country, right? It's as long as you're able to seek for knowledge, you find it. So it's an amazing company. But with the oil and gas downturn, it's really impacted a lot of people who I knew, working there that they laid off. And I left there in 2018, actually. Well, I left in 2018, December 28, 2018. That was my last day at work.
Which is not a long time ago.
Yes, not a very long time ago.
So where did you go from there when you decided? Did they lay, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with your quality of your work, did you get laid off as a result of the shortages?
No, actually, they weren't laying off. I just resigned because that was the day that my kids. I happen to have a triplet. I have a triplet, three kids, and that was the day they turned one. That was their first birthday, and that was the last day. I wanted to make sure that I remember that specific day later in life. And the major reason why I decided to resign was because I needed to really focus on my family. I needed to be able to have the flexibility that I didn't have. I didn't have the flexibility to be able to be in their lives the way I really wanted to be.
Right.
And that was what informed my living.
Now, where did you go in 2018 then?
So I started working on my firm, started, you know, putting my paperwork together just to make sure I start, you know, building towards starting my own firm. That was really like, you know, the goal was not to just live and then, you know, I started pretty much from the very bare bottom, right? From the very bare bottom. I wanted to build up, but I knew I needed to make that leap because I remember as much as I love to work, as much as I love to put in those effort, but it came to that certain point in my life where I thought that this was not something that I could sustain with the kind of family that we, very young family that we had.
When did you take CPA exam?
Oh, I started my CPA exam journey. It dates back to April 27th, 2012 was my first paper, my first exam that I wrote. I remember taking the regulation part of the CPA exam, April 27th, 2012. Yes.
Now, after you passed the exam, which was your Texas CPA, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. What about experience? How did you get experience?
So my experience, I haven't worked for an American company in Wilbros. Wilbros is an American company, and they were based in West Africa, which is Nigeria. And I worked on that CPA when I was in Nigeria. And he was both the controller for the U.S. and also for the West African, you know. And
What was the experience requirement back then to get the CPA?
1 year. So in Texas was, you know, minimum of 1 year experience.
1 year and in accounting? What exactly was it? How specific was it?
So 1 year in accounting. And you, of course, have to have a CPA who you worked under that can sign off on your application to state that you had a accounting.
So you worked under the controller, you said?
That's correct.
Right?
Yes. So and he was.
It wasn't that once you got that. It wasn't that hard to get the license then.
That's correct.
The certification.
Yes.
Okay, great. Now, you went into your own, you started your own firm.
Yes, sir.
For a CPA, all right?
Yes.
You really had not worked in public accounting, correct?
I haven't worked, like I would say, fully in public accounting, but I had some experience with, you know, working with a large amount of individuals because I also have like volunteer with VIDA program, and at some point I was a manager of a location that I remember that year we did over 3,000 tax returns at the location that I was managing. So having
3,000 tax returns?
Yes,
How many accountants did you have doing those?
Well, mostly VIDA centers make use of volunteers a lot, college students.
And I don't know. What is VIDA?
It's called the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, VITA, Volunteer Income Tax Assistance
they
Program.
They have lower income people you help to prepare their returns?
That's correct. That's very correct. So prepare tax returns for people who make below a certain threshold of income. I think back then it was, I believe it was 60,000 thereabout. I think they up it from time to time, but back then I think it was 60,000, 65,000. I don't remember now. Yes, and these people come around and then we prepare their tax return and then supervise other people. Prepare. They are employees, you know, but for the most part, many of the people that VIDA program use, they are volunteers.
So how did you start your firm? I mean, you can put out a shingle and, you know, people aren't going to flock in like they do to maybe
That's
a
right.
department store. How did you get your clients?
Yes, it's, I mean, getting back, starting a firm from the very scratch, it was not an easy task. And I've always never wanted the easier route in my life. I've always gone through that very tough part, but I believe it can be done. And if it's possible, then if someone has done it before, then we can always try to replicate that. Had to talk to a couple of other friends, other CPAs and people who started their own firm from that very bottom. I went through the Pro Advisor. So the Intuit have a program called the Pro Advisor Certification. So I went through that and I became advanced certified. So you can be listed on their website and then you get client from
time to time. You took the QuickBooks Pro Advisor?
That's correct.
Yes. So you became a certified QuickBooks?
Advanced, correct. I became certified advanced QuickBooks Pro Advisor. Okay. So that gives you a lot of exposure within your locality, right? People who are looking for accountants and bookkeepers, and then they can call you up. I get a lot of clients from them. There are some other lead generation platforms. But with my other firm called Xander Tax, that's the tax preparation firm that I run, I partnered with think about it like a payday loan. You know those payday loan, those stores like Speedy Cash and Payday Loan, where people go in to just, you know, have their check cashed and all that. So we partnered with them and we had about 10 locations last tax season. We had about 10 locations where we rent or we sublet a little portion inside their location so we can have access to their clients. So those were some of the things we did.
That's pretty good. How'd you do that? Did you know someone that did Speedy Loan or...
So I have a friend who's been into the tax preparation business who gave me a lot of insight as to how to assess some of those opportunities. And that was exactly what we did. Because when we're getting started like this, I needed to collaborate. I needed to ask questions from people who have done what we're trying to do. I mean, success always leaves traces, right? You want to reach out to those who have been through that process before. And I'm grateful today we have well over 300 clients, and it's been going very well.
Is those individuals you said? Individuals?
Yeah, mostly individuals, but we have a ton of bookkeeping, which is for the CKO, CPAs and advisors. We have a ton of bookkeeping, even small businesses, some S-Corp and some C-Corp and partnerships that we help with.
And you got it from that place you opened up?
So those ones, I'll say, I got from the Pro Advisor platform, of the bookkeeping clients, then friends and families, referrals, you know, but for the most part, they've been with either Pro Advisor or some lead generation platforms that we use to get accounting leads.
You consider yourself a good marketing person? You know how to market, do you think?
I believe I'm learning. I wouldn't consider myself an expert. I am learning because at the end of the day, we're all trying to market services and see how we can get as much clients as possible. So I would say I am still learning, but so far
is
so
it very
good.
Competitive. You find it?
It is extremely. It is extremely competitive. But one good thing about the industry is that having the CPA license actually gives, you know, there is a lot of goodwill that comes with that. And when people see you with the CPA license, I believe it's an equalizer. You know, it doesn't matter whether I have an accent, it doesn't matter if I didn't, you know, have my first degree here, or it doesn't matter if I grew up here, or I'm not white. You know, it doesn't matter if I studied in Harvard or I studied anywhere else. A CPA is a CPA because it doesn't have a language.
See, I ran across this in Colorado when I was there. I was competing with a lot of these bookkeeping services. I remember there was one called Mobile Bookkeeping Service. They had like a van. They drove around and, you know, they'd go into these clients and take their stuff and do it in the van, you know?
Wow.
All the write-up work. And also, they were a lot cheaper. They were,
yes.
They'd go in there and do just about everything except paint the building, all right, for about $75, $80 a month. That was a while ago.
Wow. All right?
You run across that? I mean, these bookkeeping, and then the question is, how do you compete with them? I mean, they can charge so much less. And, you know, it's amazing. Hey, what overhead do they have? A van? Or, you know, is that a problem you find?
No, it's... Yes, it's always a problem when you hear a client tell you that, well, I did it with Mr. B or this mom and pop place, and then I get charged, you know, maybe a fraction of what you're charging. And then sometimes you are able to explain to them that there is a difference between the work that a CPA does and a regular bookkeeper, and there is a difference because of that, there is a premium for what we're charging. But when we just getting started, pricing was a very major issue, and I think it is a major issue with most firms that are just getting started.
Is it
started.
A monthly flat fee? Is that what you charge?
That's correct. So we have a monthly flat fee arrangement where we charge based on the volume of the transactions that we're dealing with.
How does that work out? Do you ever feel like you're not, you're losing money on a client?
No, I think for me, and again, that would lead me back to why I started my Zenda Tax firm. My joy is really to be able to see small firms succeed. My joy is to be able to see that things are done correctly, especially with the Zenda Tax firm, which is the transactional firm I told you about. Most of the clients that we see here, they're not six-figure income salary earners, or they're not high net worth individuals. And they've really gotten into some mess with those mom and pop places where they filed their tax return and they had some ridiculous deductions and certain things that weren't supposed to be on the tax return. And then they get letters from the IRS and they come in here and we're able to help them. Just seeing the joy in their faces because, I mean, as a practitioner, as a CPA, we have the practitioner's priority line. We can always reach out to the IRS. We can then just help them fix some issues. And sometimes, I mean, and this is interesting. Sometimes I don't even have, depending on what the help is, I don't even have to charge them a fee for that, just doing that service for them. And the joy that comes from that alone, I think that's fulfilling. And sometimes not all about how much you get, but how much impact you make in people's lives when you do that.
When I was doing tax returns, this person comes in who went to H&R Block. They got a letter from the IRS, and H&R Block took a deduction for their refrigerator because they said it qualifies as an energy efficient refrigerator. And that back then they had an energy credit or something. All right. So I said, well, where'd they come up with this? He says, well, you go in the back of the refrigerator, it says it's energy efficient, right? they took the energy credit. And I said, what the hell? I'm sorry, what are you doing here? All right, and they said, this person was convinced that was the deduction. Wow. Now, H&R Block, I don't know if they still do it, they hire their graduates from their school to do tax returns, right?
Mm-hmm. And, that's what I do.
You know, people really believe the ads, because they do. Well, they used to advertise like crazy, H&R Block.
Mm-hmm. It happens a lot. I tell you, it still happens a lot. And when they get these letters, for the most part, and they go back to those places where they prepare their original tax return, and they can't help them because, for the most part, many of them are not practitioners. They are not CPAs or EAs or tax attorneys. They have to look for a CPA or a tax attorney around or an EA. I happen to be an EA and a CPA, so I'm able to help many of those people.
Yeah, because was it last year? Who was a what company said that you get to talk to a CPA?
That's TurboTax actually. So that's TurboTax, Intuit TurboTax, and I did that for about 3 years. Actually, I did that for 3 years, and while I was still working, so I did that on the side where you are able to get a live CPA. Maybe you prepare the tax. It's still ultimately it's a self-prepared tax return, but you just want to have a CPA take a second look at the tax return before you file it, and then just to make sure everything looks right.
Yeah, because TurboTax doesn't seem to be advertising that anymore. Are they still doing it?
They still do. I don't know if they're still doing as much or as, I mean, they used to, the adverts really massive a couple of maybe years ago, but they still do actually up to now, they still do.
Because I would think to get what they charge and to hire a CPA to look over, I don't know how a person could afford the return. So maybe it became a lot harder to find a CPA who would work for some of those fees. I don't know.
Right.
But, it's just, there's no, there's no truth in advertising when it comes to tax preparation. And I contend, all right, why is it that anybody in the world can prepare tax returns? Where, all right, if I'm an attorney, I can't practice law unless I took the bar exam. All right.
That's correct. Yes.
But, you know, this is where the difference. CPAs, we have to take the hardest professional exam.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And then, all right, anybody can do tax returns. And I thought to myself, what is it? Why doesn't anybody protect us? All right. Especially the AICPA. All right. Hey, they could go and lobby. We pay fees for them to lobby. Why don't they lobby, the legislatures and say, you know, this is not fair. It should only be, if a non-CPA has to, you know, prepare returns, they should be able, they should have to take a test.
Right. No, absolutely. I think it's been a very, 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 I mean, I'm glad you're saying that. It's been a very interesting topic, actually, because there was a time that the IRS, I don't know if you remember, they introduced at minimum, before you prepare a tax return, you should have the, I think this ROTP X exam. I don't know exactly the acronym.
Investment?
I think it's return, like the return preparer kind of exam where it's you know, you take the exam. It's not as maybe as rigorous, as involved as the CPA exam or as tedious as the CPA exam, but they just wanted to be able to regulate that, because not regulating these, you know, profession, I mean, the tax preparation, it's actually a very big issue that I think that, like you said, they should lobby and the CPA profession should do something about it.
What did they do? Did they come up with something and then?
So they took them to court, you know, they took the IRS to court and said, no, they, you know, I can't remember who took the IRS to court, but they eventually won the case against the IRS. And then
what did they say? The anti-competitive?
Yes, I think.
Anti-competitive, yeah. Okay.
So I think there are a lot of people who would go out of business if there is a regulation to stop the quacks from preparing a tax return. There's going to be a lot of people, and I really, really hope that the government, I mean the IRS, and then maybe the AICPA to lobby to have that legislation passed if it's possible.
They're not going to do it.
Oh wow!
I'll tell you why. I remember in 73, 74, when I first got my license, there used to be a company in Maryland, you couldn't call yourself an accountant unless you were a certified public accountant. Well, there was a company there called Comprehensive Accounting Services.
Okay.
And, all right, the Maryland State Board of Accountancy went after them because, hey, they called themselves accountants and they weren't CPAs. All right. Well, this company, all right, took this Maryland State Board of Accountancy, all right, to the Federal Trade Commission, claiming, hey, if you make everybody who is an accountant a CPA, you have to say they're a CPA, then, hey, you know, that's anti-competitive.
Mm.
Well, guess what? They won the case.
Wow.
Right? And the AICPA could not beat them. I mean, and I don't know if they appealed it or what.
Okay.
But then all of a sudden, you had every Tom, Dick, and Harry, you know, Bill's Accounting Services. And, you know, and I thought, what the heck did I have to go through all the CPA?
Right.
They don't. That's the one beef I have with the SCPA.
Wow.
They really don't stand up for us in many respects.
Right.
Wow. I mean, they should be the ones that say, hey, all right, they took an exam. You took an exam. I took an exam.
Yes.
Hey, we passed it. Why is it that all these H&R Blocks and get out there and, you know, they do a real good marketing job,
yes,
and convince people that they're as good or better maybe than going to a CPA? I don't think they ever bring that up in their advertisements. But you know what? If we do tax returns, and one of the things we took the exam for was taxes, right?
Correct.
Hey, the AICPA should protect us and require non-CPAs to pass some type of test.
Right.
They don't do anything. All right.
Yeah.
I think they're afraid to ruffle the feathers. All right.
Yeah, I think so too.
So by not ruffling the feathers, we get plucked.
Right.
Actually, I just made that up.
No, I really wish they come up with such, you know, I think, and there are actually some states that are already doing something about that. There are some states actually like that before you can prepare tax return in those states. I believe New York, I don't know if that's correct now, New York or California, but there are some states that before you can prepare tax return, you have to have some form of, you know, go through some form of, you know, testing or, you know, certification to be able to do that in those states.
Hey, there's a few states that even allow non-CPAs, all right, to give an opinion on financial statements.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's great. I believe at one time, I may be wrong, but I believe Wisconsin was one of those states.
Mm, okay.
So, you know, that's... why don't we just take everything we can do that's right. Away from us, right? And then we can become cobblers, you know, make shoes. Or we can go into what CPA stands for, cleaning, pressing, and alterations.
Wow. No, never heard that. That's really crazy.
Thank you so much for listening to Jaeger CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Jaeger CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.